My name's Randy. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. I overindulge in cupcakes, too, sometimes. So I'm going to share a little bit of experience, strength, and hope with you guys, hopefully. A little bit of truth tonight, too. You know, that we thing, I forgot all this stuff. It's been so long. At some of these, we balk. I love that stuff, man. It's great. I did that when I first started going to the White House after I got out of here. And I started doing that, and, you know, one lady goes, I believe it should be read as it's written down, you know, and I'm like, wow, you know. Well, your opinion is really none of my business, so keep that to yourself. All right, so I don't know about you guys, but when I came in here, I was not flying on the wings of victory. I pretty much had crashed more cars than Jeff Gordon. I almost shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. I had several stays at the Williamson County Bed and Breakfast. The Travis County Bed and Breakfast, the Cabarrus County, North Carolina Bed and Breakfast, the Mecklenburg County Bed and Breakfast in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the Hennepin County Bed and Breakfast in Minneapolis. And all of their sleep numbers are the same. They're all zero. And I just, as you can see, I'm dressed for work. I just came from work. I am an executive chef at the Arbor, which is a treatment center up in Georgetown. So I'm not even going to talk about the food at these bed and breakfast places. It's horrible. So anyway, you know, something interesting, and we read it pretty much every day, and that's how it works. And I wonder if anyone has actually kind of delved into what it says, right? Because words are powerful. And if I look at that first sentence, rarely, that means hardly ever, have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Now, I think about that, and, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I was at a point in my life where, you know, for a while, the alcohol and the drugs, the partying was fun. You know, I used to be I still am a rock star, but I used to actually be a working rock star. And that was the way of life, not conducive to sobriety or spiritual wellness at all. But the point is, I spent 36 years of my life trying to tear myself down. And I'd reached a point where I couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't live it with it. I couldn't live without it. And it was a Groundhog's Day thing. Y'all seen that movie? You know what I'm talking about? And it was every day I would get up and I would swear on anything, I'm not going to get fucked up again. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. 10:05 in the morning, I'm hammered. You know, at the time, I was going through a Jerry Springer divorce, and my doctor had prescribed me like Xanax or something, you know, for an anti-anxiety thing, because I was in sales and having a panic attack or an anxiety attack in sales is not really too cool. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to like greet the customer and ask questions when you're like under your desk cowering, you know. So I had, you know, a bowl of whatever it was on my desk. And then I had, you know, like about three cases of little Russian vodka airplane bottles in my desk drawer. And that's what I did. And I just couldn't take it anymore. It was the same every day, every day, every day. Finally, so here's what had happened was, is... we had a stack of trumpets. I was in the music business, so I was managing several music stores. And we had a stack of trumpets about this tall kind of like the cans in the grocery store you see, and someone came in wanting to look at a trumpet. So me, you know, being well into the vodka and everything, decided I was going to show them trumpets. Well, I walked over there, and I just didn't stop, and my head just went right into that stack of trumpets, and they went flying. So the next day, I called my boss, and I'm like, hey, man, I need to go to treatment. I need to go to treatment. And my boss says, well, you're fired. So I was unemployed. My car was wrecked. I didn't have anything. And I was so desperate, I actually I tried to kill myself. And I'm a big knife and sword guy. So I chose a knife that I thought would be cool. And I was going to do the honorable thing. I was going to commit seppuku, which is the Japanese disemboweling suicide, right? Because that's what guys do. And so I'm laying on my bed, and I'm like, of course I'm hammered. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to take myself out. And really nice knife, too. Smith & Wesson locking, you know, folding blade. I got about half a millimeter in, and I'm like, this hurts too much. I can't do it. I can't do it. So let me make some calls. So I called around, and I finally got in here. They had a bed open, and I came in here. And I went through the 28-day program. But here's the thing. Here's the thing that worked for me. I don't know if they do this when you all come in here, but when I came in and I sat, I was probably sitting right there, and they said, look to your left, look to your right. Those people aren't going to make it. You know, they give you some stats. You know, it's like only 9% of you guys are going to make it. You know, we're like, yeah, whatever. So I did that, and sure enough, and you guys know how it is, you bond with people. You bond with people, right? You stay in touch afterwards. Well, that kind of started drifting away after a couple weeks. And pretty soon, I was sitting right there. Another guy was sitting over there that became one of my good friends. And he got out. He was about like 2 weeks ahead of me. He got out. He relapsed like the second day after he was out. He relapsed on vodka. So he came back in. So we got to see each other again. Then I got out, and I'd see him every Sunday at the alumni thing that they used to have at Cross Park. And, you know, we would talk, and, yeah, things are going great. You know, everything's good. And so then he got out, and the next day I got a phone call. He OD'd. Gone. So when people talk about this being a life or death thing, it is, you know. And I remember earlier in sobriety when people would talk to me about this being a life or death thing, I would say, yeah, I know, but it's okay. You know, when it's my time, it's my time. But after seeing so many people get taken out, you know, this is horrible. This is a horrible disease, you know. I don't know if y'all guys have heard of the Serenity Prayer or not. Have you ever heard? So the first 3 years of my sobriety, I wore the shit out of that thing, man. It was like, you know, sometimes it was like every 5 minutes. So once again, being words, being, you know, I kind of took it apart. And I'm like, so God grant me the serenity. So serenity is peace, you know, calmness. To accept what I cannot change. The courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So the wisdom is the good one on there, because I need to figure out what can I change and what can't I change. Now, I came to the conclusion that I can't change anything outside of myself. I can barely change anything in myself. Right? It's not like I can just flip a switch and go, oh, okay, I'm good. You know, it doesn't work that way. But that really helped me through a lot of stuff. As I'm building this toolkit of spiritual tools or what have you, to be able to deal with stuff. Because my coping mechanism was during the 80s, it was tequila. During the 90s, it was rum. During the 2000s, it was vodka. And then towards the end, it was just whatever. People always ask me, well, what was your drug of choice? And I'm like, well, what you got? You know, it doesn't matter. Anything that would change the way I feel is good, right? But after being in this program for quite a few years, now, I was here like 9 years ago. My sobriety date is June 5th, 2011, so I've got a little over 7.5 years. Obviously, after all the good instruction I received here, I had some more research to do, right? I'm like, yeah, I don't know if those guys are right, you know. I think I got this. Yeah? I didn't. There's a part in the book which to me is very powerful. And it kind of talks about having a higher power, right? And that higher power in steps 1, 2, and 3 for me is huge, right? Because first I had to admit that I am powerless over fill in the blank, you know. Alcohol, drugs, cupcakes, streusel, you know, whatever it is, chocolate chip pancakes with blueberry syrup and real butter, unsalted butter, right? Fill in the blank. That's me. So I had to admit that. And my life was unmanageable. I remember telling my sponsor, I'm like, well, my life is not unmanageable because I'm in management. So I don't get it. He's like, where are you working now? I'm like, oh, yeah. Sorry. My bad. I am. It is unmanageable. All right. So and it's just basically one sentence. And it's on page 98 in the big book. And it's right after the part that talks about job or no job, wife or no wife, husband, no husband, girlfriend, no girlfriend, Maserati, no Maserati, whatever. And it's the very next sentence after that. And what it tells me, and what I did is I had to change my perspective because this chapter is working with others, right? So that's assuming that you're working with somebody and this is what you tell them. Well, I changed the perspective on that and I thought about what if somebody's working with me and this is what they're telling me, right? So I have to take it as, hey, this applies to me too. That sentence is burn into the consciousness of any man that he can get well no matter what. All he has to do is trust God and clean house. Now, when I think about those words, okay, burn into the consciousness, that's not like a subtle suggestion. That's not like, hey, you might want to think about this. It's like burn into my brain. I can get well no matter what. The only two things I have to do is trust God and clean house. And that's it. I mean, that's to me, that's powerful, right? That's the answer right there. As I continue my journey in recovery and I keep reading the book, and I read more than one book, I read the big book, I've read the NA book, and it's, you know, it's kind of the same thing. You know, so here's what I do. Because a lot of old timers get upset when you start talking about dope and stuff when you go to an AA meeting. So what I do is I just fill in the blank with whatever, you know, and I say when I'm using, you know, I'm not talking about, well, when I'm using martinis, you know, it's whatever, fill in the blank, you know, so that way I don't get chewed out by the old timers. But, you know, trust God and clean house. As I read this book, I find myself in there a lot, you know, and this book was written in 1934 or 5, whatever. I mean, that's a long time ago for me. But I find myself in there. You know, the first time I read about the Four Horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and whatever the other one is. I'm like, no, that's not right. Some of you old guys will get this. It's Arn Anderson, Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard, and Barry Windham, right? Yeah, nobody got it either. So, but, you know, that's it. You know, that feeling of loneliness and desperation, that describes me exactly, you know? You know, one of the things, and I remember when I was here, there was a guy here that was really having issues kind of with the higher power thing. And, you know, some of us kind of, you know, we help each other out because that's what we do. Because we all have the same thing, right? Some of us kind of got together and talked to him. He's like, well, I can't see God. I can't see this higher power. I can't, you know, I can't touch it. And somebody goes, well, do you see the tree leaves blowing? What is that from? That's the wind. Can you see it? No, but it's there. I mean, it's there. And I don't know if the dude ever made it or not, but I thought that was a pretty poignant thing to say to help him anyway. You know, something else that comes to mind, this is kind of funny, the old timers, bless their hearts. When I first came in to a meeting, and my first AA meeting was in 1979. My sobriety date is 2011. You guys do the math on that. So, but, you know, one of my first AA meetings that I went to, I was talking to a couple old timers about kind of what I was doing and what was going on. And I said, a week ago, I was sitting in a hot tub with three half-naked models. And this one guy looks at me and goes, son, you don't have to live that way again. And I'm like, well, no, you don't understand. I kind of want to. But, you know, this thing is serious. You know, and that's just me. I have kind of a twisted sense of humor. And I came to the conclusion my sense of humor is only for my benefit, really. Because a lot of people, you know, whatever. So, you know, there's a couple things. I was talking about the experience of finding that higher power. So one of the things, and it talks about it in the book. It's also in the movie. Have you guys seen the Bill Wilson movie? Do they show that here? With James Wood, the guy from Videodrome, as Bill Wilson, Jim Rockford as Dr. Bob, and Lieutenant Dan as Ebby. Right, so they're sitting there. Ebby gets sober, and he comes over to see Bill, and Ebby says, well, I found religion. And Bill is like, oh, here we go. But Ebby made the statement to Bill. He said, you know, why don't you come up with your own construction of what God is? You know, and I've heard sponsors tell sponsees that. It's like, make a list of the qualities that your God has. Now, I was raised in the church. Well, not in the church. I was really raised in the house. But, I mean, we went to church a lot. I was baptized, I think, as a Lutheran, like as a baby. And then for some reason, when I was in about second or third grade, my mom decided she wanted to be Southern Baptist. So we went there and I got baptized there, or, you know, exactly. My senior year of high school, I went to a Lutheran private school. The college I went to was a Methodist college, so I pretty much knew more than the average person about God from all of this experience. when I first came into the program, I started learning the difference between religion and spirituality, right? Which is very important, very important. I learned how to pray, because in the past, my prayers were kind of like, it's not Drew Carey, but it used to be Monty Hall. Let's make a deal, right? I'd say, all right, God, here's the deal. You get me out of this, and I will fill in the blank, right? Never worked. Never worked. Or, okay, here's the deal, God. I won't do this anymore if fill in the blank. Well, it even tells us in the book kind of how we should be praying, and that's important. One experience that I had here that was very, very, very educational for me. Like I said earlier, I was going through, or actually I had just come out of that Jerry Springer divorce, and I was kind of having some issues around that. I mean, that was part of my psychosis, I guess you would say. And one of the counselors here told me, he's like, look, dude, I want you to pray for your ex-wife. And I looked at him, I said, are you talking to me? I'm not going to pray for my ex-wife. Come on. He goes, yeah, I want you to pray for her. I want you to pray that she gets everything that you want for, you know, success, right? My idea of success there at the time. I said, okay, I'll do it, but, you know, I'm not going to mean it. He's like, that's okay. That's fine. Do it. So every night I would, and I don't remember what room I was in. I could probably find it. They all kind of looked the same though. But every night I would pray for my ex-wife, and I would preface it with, dear God, you know, I don't mean this, but, you know, and I would pray for her. So here's the deal. After about, 2 weeks, I achieved a high level of indifference to it. You know, it's like I just, it was gone. It was leaving me. You know, that, I guess you could call that a resentment. It was definitely a resentment. That resentment was leaving me. And, you know, by the time I got out of here, it was all good. I would pray for her. I still occasionally pray for her. Not that much, but once in a while I do. You know, and that was a really valuable moment for me as far as how to pray. I don't pray for myself unless it's pertaining to me being able to help someone else, right? They talk about service work in here. And, you know, kind of, you know, and there's a reason we do that, okay? It's not just purely altruistic and we're going to go to heaven, right? That's not what it's about for me. For me, my mind is all over the place. So some people talk about it as the committee up here says blah, blah, blah. One guy who's an attorney at the White House refers to it as the law firm. So I started thinking about that, because that's what I do, is I think about stuff. And what I came up with for mine is, it's like a cage, a big cage, and it's just full of different kinds of monkeys, right? There's rhesus monkeys, there's chimpanzees, there's those little cute little Arctic monkeys that stick their head out of the water, right? There's spider monkeys, come at you like a spider monkey. There's a couple gorillas in there too. And all these monkeys are in this cage. And they're all throwing poop at each other. And that's what it's like being in my mind. So when I do service work, whether it's for an alcoholic, whether it's for an addicted person, whether it's for, it doesn't matter who it's for, right? What that does, and there's a dual benefit to that. The benefit is whoever I'm trying to help hopefully gets some help. But for me, it gets me out of that monkey cage for a few minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, a couple hours. And that gives me serenity, you know. I was talking about having a resentment towards my ex-wife. It tells us in the book that resentment is the number one offender. And it is so easy to get a resentment. Where do they come from? Usually mine come from expectations, right? If I have an expectation about something and it doesn't turn out that way, boom, it's on, right? So what I've done is tried to do a resentment avoidance aspect to my program. So I don't have unreasonable expectations. I mean, I expect, you know, some things you can are normal, right? I expect the light to turn green eventually. I expect the lady at HEB to give me my change back. It's reasonable, right? But when it comes to anything that I want it to work out a certain way, I can't do that, because if I do that, I start getting into trouble. I start thinking about it, because that's what I do, is I think about shit. So I start thinking about it, and I, you know, all of a sudden I'm a victim, right? And that's not what I want to be. I am not a victim. So that was a pretty important thing for me as well. It's funny how you guys say the we at before every step. So I was at the White House probably my first 6 months, and everyone's talking about this being, well, this is a Wii program. This is a Wii program. And I'm like, dude, I've only got a PlayStation 2, man. What? Of course, no one got that either. But it is a Wii program. You know, in the traditions, it talks about unity, right? And think of all of us together as a herd of something, or a pack of wolves, maybe, or maybe a flock of monkeys. The people that are ahead, behind, off to the side, those are going to get picked off, right? The people in the middle are the ones who are going to stay relatively safe. Now, the cool thing about when I first came into the programs was I thought I was... It's like, you don't understand. You don't understand what I've been through. You don't understand my pain. Bullshit. Everyone has been through something similar, right? And I say this, and some people don't like it, but it's funny. Once again, it's my humor. All our stories basically are generally the same. Right? It's like we started out, we went off the rails, we got hammered, we got messed up, whatever. And then here we are. We wrecked a bunch of cars, we wrecked marriages, we lost custody of our kids. Fill in the blank, whatever. And then here we are. Right? The only difference is the farm animals are a little bit different. Right? Yeah, people don't like that. But the cool thing was when I came in, it's like people could identify, people understood what I was feeling, right? Up until that point, I don't think anybody really kind of understood what was going on with me. I mean, you know, I've been in psychiatric stuff. They didn't know what was going on with me. They couldn't figure it out. And they had a bunch of doctors and machinery in there, too. And they couldn't figure it out. The thing that is kind of interesting for me is for most people, they can look at their family history. You know, it's like, well, my grandfather, you know, your mom goes, well, your grandfather, you know. So it's genetic, right? Well, I'm adopted, so I have no idea. I have no idea what's going on. my first OD, I think I was 3 or 4 years old, right? I had some baby aspirin, liquid baby aspirin, and I liked it. So I crawled all the way up to the medicine cabinet, opened it up, picked out the right bottle, and I drank the whole bottle. And thus I had to go to the hospital and get my stomach pumped, right? So what that tells me is that it's in here, you know. I didn't like turn into an alcoholic. I didn't turn into a drug addict. I think I was one from the get-go, you know. That's just the way my brain is wired. Like I said, I work in treatment centers, in a treatment center, and a couple of the therapists have told me, and because I've said this, I'm like, my brain is wired a little bit differently, you know, and she's like, yeah, it is. So I guess that's clarification on that. So an important thing that I've also found with this recovery deal is, how do you do it? How does it work? How do you do it? We read how it works, you know. Take some time and look at that. Take it apart. Has anyone gone to the PPG meetings, right, where they take it like three words at a time, and then they've got the 1875 dictionary, and they look up. Oh, shot through. It means when you're weaving something, you put a different color, you know. But seriously, that's kind of what you have to do to this stuff. And you can do it to the whole book. Just take it one sentence at a time and say, well, how does that pertain to me? First of all, what does it mean? What does it mean? And how does that pertain to me? What can I get out of it? You know what I mean? As I was building my toolkit, what I learned was, and I teach piano too, so I kind of have that perspective going on too. And the way you learn something is, anyone, how do you learn something? Repetition. Repetition strengthens and confirms, right? So if I look at these steps, and I try and do that every day, and I repeat that and repeat and repeat and repeat, pretty soon that's the beginning of my psychic change. You know, that's how it works for me. There's two types of spiritual experience. There's the bright light, you know, right, angels are there and the bush is on fire and the Red Sea is parting. And you're like, Jesus. And then there's the educational type. And the educational type is kind of what happens to me. Because I haven't had any of that thing. I know a guy who like, he's like, well, God told me to do, and I'm like, does he have a British accent? What? I mean, what? What does God sound like? What does he say? How does this happen? You know, and I'm like, am I spiritually lacking because I don't hear the voice of God? God speaks to me through other people. You know, I hear something at a meeting and I'm like, you know, and I've read that book probably more than two times. You know, I've read that book, you know, maybe 100 times, you know. I always go to big book studies because I like different perspective on what's being read. Because it doesn't always mean to me what it means to someone else or what it means to you or to you or you. And I get that perspective, which is important to me. It enhances my spiritual understanding of everything. The spiritual, and I've heard it said too that, you know, this is a threefold disease. You've got the physical allergy, you've got the mental obsession, and you've got the spiritual malady. Well, for me, the physical craving part, that went away after, after a good solid detox and probably about a year of staying away from it, I started coming around mentally, feeling a little bit better physically, you know. That mental obsession, that still pops up once in a while. Last year, I was driving down I-35, and I saw like a specs truck or something that had a brand new, some sort of bourbon on it, and I've never had it. I'm like, huh? You know, for a split second, boom. And then I play the movie all the way through to the end, and it ends up at the Travis County Bed and Breakfast. No. That spiritual malady, though, that's something that's with me all the time. That's something that I have to continue to expand. And it says, having had, past tense, step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, you know, that's pretty powerful too. So there's got to be some sort of higher power type thing, you know. And people talk about higher power, they come in and it can be just the group is my higher power. For me, when I was at that phase, it's like, well, the judge is a higher power. I mean, you know, the my PO is higher power, you know, so whatever works. A sponsor, they told me to get a sponsor, so I got one. He told me to call him every day, and I did for 1 week, and then he wouldn't answer his phone after that. I still kept calling and leaving messages. Finally, on like day 17, he finally answered, and he goes, "What's up, dude?" I'm like, "Yeah, you told me to call you every day." He's like, "Oh, man, I moved to California." And I'm like, "All right, cool, have fun." So it took me, I went through three sponsors like in 2 weeks till I got someone, right? And what I did was I went to meetings. As soon as I got out of here, no job, no car, no girlfriend, no wife, no nothing. Well, I had a dog, but that's it. You know, so I had nothing to do but go to meetings. I went to 4 meetings a day. They recommend, and I don't know who they are, but they recommend. They recommend 90 and 90, and I think I was like at 217 and 90. You know, so what I did is I just listened to everybody, and I picked out someone that kind of I thought could relate to me, I could relate to. You know, and approached him. I said, "Hey, can you sponsor me?" And he's like, "Yeah, let's do it." And, you know, we did it. And it's still working. But, you know, it's one day at a time. If I start, you know, when we read the promises, you know, it says not to regret the past nor shut the door on it. So if I start thinking about, you know, if only I would have taken exit 233 instead of 234, I wouldn't have, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, it is what it is. I can't change the past. If I start living in the wreckage of my future, that does no good either. Right? It's like, no, I have to stay present. And what does it mean to stay present? You know, it means to be right here, right now, and stay right here, right now. 5 minutes from now, I will be 5 minutes from now. But right now, I'm right here, right? I'm not thinking about the wreckage of my future or the wreckage of my past, you know. I can't change it. You know, a couple things too, back to the repetition. You know, you hear people talk about having a spiritual toolkit, and I thought of myself as having like one of those things in the back of my truck, the toolkit, plus I had the, you know, the Craftsman thing with the drawers that pull out. Yeah. Plus I had a tool belt that I put stuff. And then I've got a Leatherman spiritual tool on this side, right? Because that's what I'm doing. I'm learning these different tools. So before, the coping mechanism was, well, just get out of myself. Now I know how to deal with stuff in a healthy way. And it's incredible. I mean, I would never do that before. You know, get a promotion, let's get hammered. Got fired, let's get hammered. Absolutely boring day, nothing going on, let's get hammered. Just woke up, hey, let's get hammered. Been up all night, hey, let's get hammered. Some more. Right? I always, and I didn't do it this year, but every holiday season at the White House, I always share the story of me being a completely normal alcoholic, having a Christmas party at my apartment, you know, several years ago. And I was going to make this primo eggnog. So I had like four kinds of rum. You know, I had dark rum. I had Captain Morgan spiced rum. I had the Bacardi Silver, and I had something else. So making all this eggnog, and, you know, it's awesome. Well, pretty soon the eggnog's all gone, or the rum's all gone. I had plenty of eggnog. So they're like, well, what do we do now? And I'm like, well, I got some tequila. So I made eggnog with tequila. Well, we killed that. And they're like, all right, what do we do now? And I'm like, hang on, I'll be right back. So I went to the bathroom, and I pulled out two family-sized bottles of NyQuil. And I'm like, you know what? We're going to have some festive eggnog now, because it's... It's green. It's green. And so, you know, and that's the kind of stuff I did. I mean, you know, it's all about the extremes. So that's probably about my time. I'm going to say to any of you struggling, just keep doing it. Keep coming back. Don't come back here if you can help it. But, you know, go out there, get yourself a sponsor, get a home group, go to a bunch of meetings, practice these principles in all your affairs. And that's not just when you come to the alumni speaking thing. That's at work. That's at HEB. That's at JCPenney's. Well, if you shop there, but Macy's. That's every, when you're going down the road. I'm so proud of myself. I have not flipped anyone off for at least 4 years. I know. Thank you. Thank you very much.